rain last night.
We were down here about 9 o'clock in the evening, and they had Main Street closed off right in front of the gas station there. It was all flooded over. That's the first time that's happened since we did all that work on that parking lot down there and made all those accommodations. They were all redirecting traffic, and we were up winding through this way, and it was a mess all through town. Got to Cambridge, not a drop of rain anywhere up there. So that's not true. It did rain up there, but not like it did down here, at least right at that time. We were coming down on the expressway from up north, and coming down 77, the water was flooded on the road. Now, I mean, not flooded over, but when you're on the expressway and that water's puddled up like that, you know it's been raining hard because it hasn't run off yet. So that was quite the rain last night. Glad you survived. Glad you made it here this morning. We're in Proverbs chapter 23. Proverbs chapter 23. I think that's right around the middle of the Bible there somewhere. Proverbs 23. Doug, if you can help me. If anybody doesn't have this, I know Doug and Katie won't have one of these. If you don't have your notes from Proverbs 23, we've got a few extras here. And we're on the last page, the third page of it. Hopefully we'll finish up Proverbs 23 this morning. All right, I guess everybody else is set. Thank you. Proverbs 23, the third page. We've talked about the father's call in verse 15 to 18, the father's caution in verse 19 to 21, the father's counsel, verse 22 and verse 23. And this morning, on this last page, we come to a father's comfort in verse 24 and verse 25. Again, he's addressing his son. It's set up in verse 15, my son. Verse 19, hear thou my son. Again in verse 26, my son. So he's addressing his son here and giving the father's call, the father's caution, the father's counsel, and now the father's comfort. And as we read these verses, verse 24 and verse 25, the father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. You can't help when you read those verses of wondering if Solomon didn't get those from his father. All right, some of the counsel that Solomon gave, he gave because he got it from a wise father. And that's how wisdom ought to go, from one generation down to the next. So let's be careful to pass that wisdom on to our offspring. And David said, Solomon said this, and he said, the father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice. Think about David for a moment. He probably greatly rejoiced in Solomon, his son. I mean, he had a son named Amnon. If you remember Amnon, he's the one that forced his own half-sister Tamar. He was a filthy, vile son. Then he had a son named Absalom. That didn't turn out so good for David. He rebelled against his own father and laid with his father's own concubines, spread a tent on the hill, and so he was a pretty vile and vulgar guy. And then the next son was Abinadab, and Abinadab was just a weak, go-with-the-wind kind of guy. He's not much of a man. Couldn't take much of a stand. He tried to get the throne after David died, but he didn't have it in him. So David had one son that had some wisdom, and that was Solomon. And David, we could hear him saying, the father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise son shall have joy of him. The foolish son, Solomon has mentioned so many times, bringeth his father and his mother shame. But the wise child shall have joy of him. So notice the father's comfort, first of all, in a righteous son. In a righteous son. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Raising our children to be righteous, raising them to be wise, goes contrary to worldly philosophy. The world's not trying to raise their children to be righteous. Not trying to raise them to be wise. Educated, yes. Knowledgeable, yes. But wisdom's not really a theme. When you pick up a brochure for any school or place of education, they're going to promote science and health and mathematics, and there's nothing wrong. We need those things, but you won't find many that say, here at this school, your child will be instructed in the ways of wisdom. The world does not emphasize that. But here Solomon writes and says, the father of a righteous child shall greatly rejoice. Better to have a son or a child that's righteous than one that's a genius. Stephen Hawking was a genius, but he died without Christ. An IQ of 160 isn't going to cut it. But wisdom, you know what the nice thing about wisdom is? It can hit a guy with an IQ of 90 or a lady with an IQ of 90. We kind of call it common sense or horse sense sometimes, but it's wisdom and it's no respecter of persons. We read a lot about wisdom in the opening chapters. With all thy getting, get wisdom, get understanding. So the righteous son, number two, a father's comfort in a responsible son. Verse number 25. A responsible son. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. Everything that we do reflects on our parents. I drilled in my kids that when they were in their teenage years, you are a Leafly. Behave yourself. We've gone through years and years of trying to maintain that name and keep that name good and clean and honest. Don't blow it now. We all try to pass those responsibilities onto our children. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. A holy life will produce a happy life. All right, a holy life will produce a happy life. Not just for ourselves, but for those around us. Those that are concerned about us, those that love us, those that care for us, those that are watching us. A holy life produces a happy life. What is the goal of our life? The Father's comfort. All these came under the category of comments about wisdom. We started in verse 15, all the way down to verse number 25, and all these things were about the wisdom, the Father's call, caution, counsel, and comfort. In verse number 26 then, we come to letter B, we come to the next section here, not only the comments about wisdom, but in verse 26, my son, give me thine heart and let thine eyes observe my ways, for a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit. She also lieth in wait as for prey, and increaseth the transgressors among men. Now Solomon returns to a theme that he has mentioned 10 times already. 10 chapters before this have mentioned the subject of women. Including this chapter, 5 more are going to address it. Chapter 23, 25, 27, 30, 31. Solomon just tried to drill into his son's head the importance of right decisions when it came to marriage. When it came to men and women. Now Solomon, when he writes Proverbs, is at the middle, the peak of his youth. Alright? When he's writing Proverbs, Song of Solomon was early in his days. Proverbs is in the middle of those days, and Ecclesiastes is at the end of those days, and we see a whole different attitude and a whole different demeanor in Solomon as he writes them. And as he writes the book of Proverbs, he has already stuck his foot in the bucket, as so to speak. In Song of Solomon, I think he's got 600 wives already. Or no, 300 wives in Song of Solomon, the first book he wrote. Now, as you know, he's going to end up with 700. So he was only halfway there when he wrote Song of Solomon. Proverbs is after Song of Solomon. He's telling his son, son, I've made a lot of mistakes in this way. Observe my ways. Don't follow them. Observe them. Mark them. Note them. Now, that's great advice. But can I tell you, that doesn't usually work. Do what I say, not what I do. That doesn't work. Because they're going to do what we do, not what we say. And Solomon is passing on this information. He's learned by experience, but it's kind of a little bit too late for that, I hate to say. Notice in his comments about women, his letter B. First of all, he makes an appeal to the heart in verse 26. An appeal to the heart. And we've said this over and over, and Solomon emphasizes this again. He's not trying to reach his son's mind. He's not trying to reach his intellect. He's trying to reach his heart. You can have your child's mind, and that really isn't going to accomplish much. But when you got their heart, that's a whole other subject. When a child controls its actions because it doesn't want to break the heart of its mother or father, that's much better than a mind that can do trigonometry or biology, because it's more of a caring person. So the qualities that we have to emphasize, he makes an appeal to the heart. Verse 26, "My son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways." Solomon desired to set a good example. We all desire to set a good example, but we all fall short many times. But if we can have the heart of the child, if we can have the heart of the young person, notice a contrast here, a couple of references. 1 Kings chapter 3, we'll not turn there, but 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 3. Early in Solomon's life, when he prays and asks God for wisdom, and he gets that wisdom. In 1 Kings 3, 3, it says this, "Solomon loved the Lord." Solomon loved the Lord. The Lord had his heart. That's what love is. We can almost hear, as Solomon says, "My son, give me thine heart," he's echoing the voice of God the Father. "My son, give me thine heart." You know what God wants from us? Our heart. If he gets our heart, he's got everything else. We can give him our money, we can give him our mind, we can give him our service, we can give him all that. We can do that without giving him our heart. I was teaching the book of Jonah down at the college this week, and in the book of Jonah, we saw this, that in chapters 1 and 2, Jonah was backslidden out of the will of God. "Arise, go to Nineveh." "No, go. I'm going to Tarshish." He ends up in the belly of the whale. Chapter 1 and 2, he's backslidden out of the will of God. Chapter 3 and 4, he's backslidden in the will of God. He's doing the right thing. He gets there and he goes to Nineveh. He preaches what he's supposed to preach. They repent and they believe, and he gets angry with God over it. He gets mad because those people repented of their sin and turned to God. And he's as backslidden as all get out, but he's doing what God wants him to do. You know, we've said this before. You know the easiest place to backslide? In church. Coming to church and doing the right things, doing everything right outwardly, but being cold on the inside. That's why we need to guard our hearts, not our minds, not even our service. But everything we do, they used to tell us in Bible college, the easiest place to backslide is in Bible college. Because you can say, "Hey, I'm in Bible college. I'm studying for the ministry. I'm running the bus route. I'm teaching a Sunday school class." You can do all that stuff outwardly and have a heart that's far from God. Jonah was an example of being backslidden out of the will of God. Solomon's telling his son, "Son, there was a day where I loved the Lord." The Bible even said, "I love the Lord." But in 1 Kings 11:1, it says Solomon loved many strange women. See what happened to Solomon? It wasn't his mind. It wasn't his feet. It wasn't his hands. It wasn't even necessarily his eyes. It was his heart. He loved many strange women. We've got to guard our hearts. Solomon makes an appeal to his heart in verse 26. Then in verse 27 and verse 28, he says, "For a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit." The appeal of the harlot. The appeal of the harlot. Again, Solomon is warning his son. He says in verse 27, how dangerous she is. "For a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit." A deep ditch. You know what Solomon is telling his son? Immorality is very easy to fall into, but very hard to get out of. And boy, isn't that the truth. Immorality is a deep ditch. It's easy to fall in, but it's hard to get out. Those that get involved in immorality, pornography, adultery, whatever it might be, they have no idea when they're standing at the edge of that ditch what a precipice it is. And then once they fall into that, it is hard, hard, hard to get back out of that. He says in that verse, it is a narrow pit. A sloped pit, you can claw your way out of. A narrow pit is very hard to get out of. Solomon's telling his son, son, be careful. He's talked about this whorish woman, this harlot, many times throughout the scriptures of winking, blinking with her eyes and saying, you know, giving him solaces and coming and all these things and bribing and buying. He's telling her, watch out for that whorish woman. She's dangerous. She's a deep ditch. A strange woman is a narrow pit. A strange woman is those that are walking contrary to God. She's dangerous. Not only that, but she's destructive. Verse 28. How destructive she is. She also lieth in wait as for a prey, and increaseth the transgressors among men. She lieth in wait for a prey. She's deceptive. Remember earlier in Proverbs, we talked about Solomon was sitting. He's sitting on the throne in the end of Proverbs, giving his advice as a king. But in the opening chapters, he was walking down through the city and through the villages. He was sitting in the upper room on the main street, looking out the window and watching society pass by and giving all of his counsel and his advice and his wisdom from that viewpoint. And one of the places there, he said this. He said, I sat in the window and watched, and I saw that woman. And I saw the young foolish boy come and be sucked in by her deceptive means and deceptive manner. And now he's writing to his son and saying, son, be careful of that. Young men are prone to be sucked in by those kind of things. With our modern technology, there's every opportunity for people to get hooked into that kind of thing. So Solomon is warning him, it's not only dangerous, but it's destructive. It increaseth the transgressors among men. I have read statistics, and I don't go a lot into statistics. Statistics can be slanted to say anything you want to say, basically. So I'm very careful with them. But I have read things that a great percentage of men in churches have a problem with pornography. A great percentage of men. In fact, a great percentage of men in the ministry have a problem with pornography. That's what Solomon's saying right here. It increaseth the transgressors among men. It's destructive. It's dangerous. I am brokenhearted to say, I have preacher friends that are not in the ministry any longer because of this very thing. And so Solomon is he's making an appeal to his heart. He's making an appeal to him concerning the harlot. He's talking about how dangerous and destructive those ways and those things can be. Comments about women. Then in verse 29, we have one of the greatest passages in all the Bible about alcohol. The number one drug in America. I don't know if you remember, a couple years, 3 years, 4 years, I don't know what it was. I preached a sermon. The number one drug in America. And it wasn't cocaine. It wasn't heroin. It was alcohol. We had a family that left the church over that because they didn't think there was anything wrong with drinking wine, with social drinking, with things along that line. And I'm sorry for them, but it's not going to change Proverbs chapter 23. Proverbs chapter 23 says in verse number 29, who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? There's six questions, half a dozen questions asked right there. And it's all talking about one subject, drinking. All right? Comments about wine. Number one, look at the drunkard. Look at the drunkard. Our society justifies alcohol consumption. The advertisements. It's the number one legal drug in America. Not only the number one drug, but the number one legal drug. We'll talk about different things about it. It doesn't make sense. With all the deaths on the highways from drunken driving, with all the domestic violence from drunken fathers, with all the abuse on children from even drunken mothers. It makes absolutely no sense that that is a legal drug in America, except for one thing. Murphy's Law says if it doesn't make sense, there's a buck in it somewhere. And the government is making lots and lots and lots of money. In fact, most of those in the positions of influence and power are drunks themselves. And so here we look at something that Solomon addressed thousands of years ago that is still just as big a problem today as it was back then. Look at the drunkard. Number one, strong drink stupefies. It stupefies. S-T-U-P-E-F-I-E-S. Stupefies. We get a word from that called stupid. That's what the drunkard looks like when he drinks. He'll say things he wouldn't ordinarily say. He'll do things he wouldn't ordinarily do. We've all probably been in the world long enough to know there are funny drunks and there are angry drunks. But neither one is funny. And neither one is safe. It stupefies. It changes behavior. A wise person would not put anything into their body that changes their behavior. Some folks have to take legal drugs for different issues that affect them in different ways. And boy, they just get all twisted out because it makes them... Yet we've all had elderly folks or folks that know that were put on some prescription and it affected their mind. It affected their behavior. That's a sad, sad thing. And those are extreme conditions that happen there. But here's just something that's available in any store for anybody to walk out with. Strong drink stupefies. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness as I? They that tarry long at the wine. They that go to seek mixed wine. Some will justify and say, well, they that tarry long at the wine. So it's all right if you don't tarry long. Well, he says, they that go to seek it. The minute you walk to the refrigerator and grab it, you're seeking it. The minute you go to the store and buy it, you're seeking it. So you can't get off the hook with taking one clause without the other one. The other excuse is, well, it's just a disease. Alcoholism is a disease. No, alcoholism is a sin. And it begins with the first drink. You're not a murderer after you kill somebody five or six times. You're a murderer after you murder once. You're not a sinner after you sin five or six times. You're a sinner when you sin once. You're not a drunkard when you drink too much. You're a drunkard when you drink. It's not a disease. If it was a disease, let's take our current issue, coronavirus. That's a disease. Could you imagine if I could walk down here to the gas station across the street and walk in and say, I want a 16-ounce coronavirus. Now, there is a Corona beer, I understand that, so we're not talking about that. But I want 16 ounces of coronavirus. I want 16 ounces of disease. You think they would have it in the store? You think there'd be a distillery in Indiana, or that's the one I remember seeing one time, or wherever it is, a distillery where people go in there and work all day to create a virus? That's what they do at the distilleries for alcohol. Nobody believes it's a disease. If it was a disease, they'd do everything like they're trying to do now to shut it down. They're not trying to do anything to shut it down. When we went in and opposed on two different occasions, opposed the selling of alcohol across the street from the church, we went in because we tried to say it's not good, it's not right. Our legal counsel, when I called them, said, preacher, if you go in and say you're against drinking because the Bible's against it, they're going to shut you. They won't give you an answer. You've got to come up with other reasons why they shouldn't be able to sell it there. So we did everything we could, making maps about how many places in Byesville sold it and how close it was to the church, everything. We were climbing a wall that we couldn't get over. And we kind of knew it anyways. But why'd we do it? Because it was the right thing to do. To oppose it on every occasion, on every hand, in every way that we can. It's not a disease. If it was a disease, they'd shut it all down. Nothing is more humorous than to hear Budweiser say at the end of their commercial, drink responsibly. They don't want you to drink. They want you to drink in excess. That's just a political stunt to try to get them off the hook. Most people in positions of power or influence are heavy drinkers. That's the only way you can explain why they allow things to go the way they go. Strong drink stupefies. Number two, strong drink stings. Stings. Verse 31 and verse 32. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red. All right? It already said don't seek it. Now it's saying not even look at it. Don't even look at it. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth its color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Again, wine in biblical days was just fermented grape juice. If it sat on the shelf too long, watch out. I think I've shared this story before. When my kids were very little, we were at Grandpa's house, or they were at Grandpa's house, and Grandpa got the apple cider down that had been on the shelf too long. And the kids were drinking it, and they were, and I wasn't there, and I got there later, and these kids were just acting stupid. I mean, kids are stupid anyway. It's the way they act. They're funny. They're giddy. I don't mean it in a bad way, but they were just acting out of their minds. And we finally concluded that that apple cider had sat on the shelf too long. It's what happened to Noah back in Genesis. After the earth's atmosphere had changed, that stuff he'd been drinking all that time now had a quality to it it never had before. That grape juice he was drinking now, saying, boy, this has got a little bit of kick to it now. It's different than it ever used to be. Next thing you know, he's laying on the floor drunk. Strong drink stings. Our body is not designed. Did you know this scientifically? And I'm not a science guy, so I have to trust those that are. Our body is not designed to absorb alcohol. That's why so many people, when they drink, vomit. Because the body is rejecting that design and that makeup inside the body. It doesn't absorb it. So what it does, if it doesn't vomit it up out of the mouth, it's trying to force it out. You know what? Where it goes? It goes right up here. And that's why they start acting stupid. Doing things they wouldn't ordinarily, because it affects here. It doesn't affect the rest of the body. It goes straight for the head. It goes straight for the actions. And so a lot of times you get somebody that's been drunk and say, where were you last night at 10 o'clock? I don't know. Who were you with? I don't know. Where were you? What were you doing? I don't know. Because the body has forced all that stuff up and it clouds the mind. Strong drink stings. You know how much it stings? Just listen to this, because you can't get all this done. 20% of all freezing deaths in the winter are alcohol related. 25% of all choking deaths are alcohol related. 50% of deaths from falls are alcohol related. 52% of fire deaths are alcohol related. 60% of suicides are alcohol related. 64% of murders are alcohol related. 69% of drownings are because people have been consuming alcohol. 76% of aircraft deaths, small private planes, whatever they are, the pilots have been drinking. 72% of assaults and robberies. 60% of rape cases. 80% of criminal court cases are all alcohol related. Now tell me why it's legal. Tell me why you can walk into just about any store in Byesville and buy it. A community of 2,500 people, and I think there are 9 or 10 different places in this little village where you can go in and buy alcohol. Do we need it? I mean, is there that many people consuming it? There must be, or they wouldn't be selling it. Look at the drunkard. Number 2, verse 33 and verse 34. Learn from the drunkard. Verse 33 and verse 34. Thine eyes shall behold strange women. Thine heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or he that lieth upon the top of a mast. Learn from the drunkard. When my kids were younger and little, if we saw a drunk out in public somewhere, I would have my kids stop and watch them and look and see how ridiculous they were and how stupid they acted and how unnatural they were. It was a good teaching tool. Learn from the drunkard. Number 1, what the drunkard desires. Thine eyes shall behold strange women.
Drunkenness and immorality go together. That's not even debatable. You get a bunch of people together drinking, and it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be trouble. You go through the things in the Bible where there were people drinking, and you know what you find? You find immorality. Noah and his sons coming in and finding him naked on the floor in the room, and things that transpired and happened. It was when John the Baptist got beheaded because Herod was having that wild drinking party and the dancing went on. And in the midst of that, they asked, what do you want? And they wanted the head of John the Baptist in a charger. Things that we wouldn't ordinarily and normally do when we're sober, people do when they're drunk. What the drunkard desires, number two, what the drunkard declares. And thine heart shall utter perverse things. Thy heart shall utter perverse things. What the drunkard declares. Alcohol loosens the tongue. You know that those in the FBI, the CIA, it's even in their manuals that one way they can get unsuspecting people to confess things they wouldn't nor is to take them out and wine them and dine them. To take them out and get them to drink a little bit because it loosens their tongue. Everybody knows that. And when you lose control of your mind and your tongue, you have no idea what's going to come out. Those things that you and I have in our mind and our heart that we are wise enough and good enough to subdue and to oppress and to put down by the power of the Holy Ghost that's in us and our conscience. When we lose our faculties, those things just naturally come out. And a drunk can be a guy who's normally a nice, easy guy to get along with. But let him get some alcohol in him and watch his conversation, his language, the things that he says. What the drunkard declares. Then thirdly, what the drunkard does. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or as he that lieth upon the top of the mast. He that lieth down in the midst of the sea. The drunkard, laying on the floor, everything spinning around him. Everything's moving, like being in the midst of the sea. Or you can look at it this way, who would lie down in the midst of the sea? And that's what it's saying the drunkard does. Thou shalt be as he that lieth down upon the midst of the sea. Your actions are irresponsible. Your actions are unreasonable. Now again, somebody will say, well, that's only for the person here. But you know what? You can't get here without starting here. Well, I just have wine with my meal. Well, then you're a wine bibber. You drink. And how are you going to teach your kids not to drink? You say, well, it's all right to do in moderation. It's all right to do. No, just here's what it says. Don't seek it. Don't look upon it. Taste not. Touch not. Handle not. What the drunkard does. He that lieth down upon the top of a mast. The mast is what we call the crow's nest in the top of a boat. Would a watchman take a nap up in that spot? Way suspended way up above the ship and everything else. Irresponsible, first of all, because he's not doing his job and watching. Number two, he's fallen asleep in a very dangerous position, a very dangerous place. And all because of strong drink. Thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or he that lieth upon the top of the mast. Foolish actions, unsafe, harmful to self, harmful to others. Stay away from it. Look at the drunkard. Learn from the drunkard. Number three, listen to the drunkard. Verse 35. They have stricken me, shalt thou say. You know what the drunk's doing? He's talking to himself. They have stricken me. That's the voice of the drunkard. He talks to himself. He's babbling. He's mumbling. You get around drunk people, that's what they do. They talk to themselves. The problem is when they start answering themselves too, then you really got problems. They have stricken me, thou shalt thou say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Listen to the drunkard as he talks to himself. Number one, what he discovers. They have stricken me, shalt thou say, and I was not sick. You know when he discovers that? The next day. The next morning. Where did these bruises come from? Why does it hurt in my ribs? What happened to the back of my head? They don't even know what happened to them. They were too drunk. They did things. They had actions that just could not be explained. They had problems they couldn't defend. They're not sick, but they have a headache. They'd got beaten and they felt it, and he didn't feel a thing because he was stupefied. But now he wakes up the next morning and doesn't even know how these things happened. Even when he wakes up the next morning and he's sober, he doesn't know how those things happened. Loss of control, loss of self-esteem, what he discovers. Then finally, number two, what he decides. And here's the foolishness of the drunkard. You know what he decides? I'm going back to Circle K and get another 12-pack. That's how they handle that situation. That's called addiction. And it's not addiction just if these things happen and he goes back to get another 12-pack. It's an addiction when you say, well, I drink it with this meal, so I've got to drink it with that meal, and I've got to drink it with this meal. That's an addiction. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Back to the bottle. And it controls their life. And it starts with the first drink. If you never take the first drink, you can't become a drunkard. It's just that simple. If it never passes your lips, it'll never be a problem. The advice that Solomon gives to his son in Proverbs chapter 23. Father, thank you for the book of Proverbs, again, for the practical wisdom that it gives. Lord, the good advice. Lord, help us to heed that advice, to take that advice, not just in these areas, which we don't have much problem with, but God, as we see our society and see our world and our families around us, God, may we show them the love of God by being concerned for their souls. Bless our morning service and those that come to unite with us in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, take a short 15-minute break and we'll begin our morning service.